Hello, everybody. It's been a while, but we're back with a lockdown edition of On The Ropes. We'll be using modern technology to bring you interviews with some past and present boxing stars. We're thrilled to say that on this edition, we have joining us all the way from his LA home, Gary Stretch, a former British light middleweight champion, WBC international champion, and a former world middleweight title challenger. We'll be discussing with Gary his colourful career to date as a boxer, a model, an actor and a producer. Gary, firstly, welcome to On The Ropes, and how are you and your loved ones, and hopefully keeping safe during coronavirus?
Thanks, boys. You know, it is what it is. It's locked down, so we have limited access to, you know, to life, but we're locked down. We got to store once a week and get what we need, and we're just trying to stay with the regulations.
And Gary, has the missus got you doing any DIY around the house, or how are you keeping busy during lockdown?
That was way before coronavirus. So no, I'm not great around the house, but I do what I can, and I mean, basically we're just trying to, you know, like everyone else, see it through and stick to the regulations and, you know, try not make this thing any worse than what it is. And hopefully it's gonna come to some kind of forte. But, you know, right now, LA figures are going up, not down. So it's a little scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gary, let's strip it back a little bit now to the very early days for you. You grew up in St. Helens, which is obviously big on rugby. My first question really is, how did you get involved in boxing, you know, all those years ago?
My mother and father got divorced, and my mother pretty much ran away. And my father loved her very much. And I think I was about 8 years of age at the time. And I was a very angry kid. And so I got to fight at school, and they decided to introduce me to a new found friend called Discipline, and that was boxing. But they made me go every night. My dad dropped me off and picked me up every day. And I never hit a bag in 9 months. And every time my father picked me up, he would say to my trainer, how was he today? And his name was Albert Freeman. And Albert said he was great. And I never did anything, Charlie. And after 9 months of being rebellious, I fell in love with the old man. And one day he looked at me, I looked at him, I winked. He said, you want to try a little bit today? I said, sure. And we started boxing. I may have been nine, and the rest is history. But I did it for the love of an old man who was extremely loyal to me and loved me dearly. And about 50% of my career was for him, and about 50% became for me. Meaning, when I started my career, I did it for him, and then at the latter end of my career, I did it for myself. So, you know, it's a different mentality, but that was basically how I got into the game.
And I mean, you had quite a colourful amateur career, Gary. I mean, how many fights in total did you have in the amateur games before stepping up? And I think an interesting fact as well, which probably led you to a career in TV.
I had 98 amateur, quite a few. I won 87. The biggest amateur, fight I had was with George Collins, which the old boy came to my house one day and said, there's the NABC, he's trying to go in, Collins is in it, I think he'll beat him. I said, okay. And so when in the 1985 NABC, I fought Collins, George, and knocked him out in the first round, and then got the offer to turn pro. Collins had a deal with Frank Warren, and I turned pro with Mickey Duff, Mike Barrett.
But that's what I was going to say. You know, you were destined even back then for a career TV, because the BBC actually aired that bout, didn't they? Because Collins was going for the Guinness Book of Records. He was 67 and 0.
yeah, I guess. I still can't get a copy of Bites. I've been trying to get it forever. I want to show my wife. I said, I knocked the guy out once. And she's like, yeah, right. He was 74-0. I've had difficulty finding the fight, but it was heard. It was on BBC, Guinness Book Record Breakers.
Record Breakers, yeah, Roy Castle. I remember that show.
I've had an issue trying to get it.
Okay, well, hopefully we might find that for you, Gary. Leave that one with us. But just moving on now, you obviously turned professional, and I was just wondering, which year did you make that decision? It sounds like it was pretty much after the Collins fight. And how did you choose your team at the time and the promoter at the time?
Well, at the time, I mean, times have changed so much. So at the time, when I turned pro, it was pretty much in England, for sure. I'm not sure about the US, but it was two channels, ITV and BBC. So Frank Warren had one channel and Duff had the other channel. So it was a matter of, you got to be one or the other, because you can be the greatest fighter in the world, but if no one sees you, no one cares. So Collins signed with Warren, and I signed with Mickey Duff. Mike Barrett, and that was basically the only option you have is one or the other. And then, you know, our careers did what we did. Collins had a great career too. Amazing kid. I think Curtin Lang was his first defeat, which is no shame, because Lang is amazing. And I went all the way up to, you know, the Eubanks fight. I had one stupid loss. Flash Ted, Julian Monville early in my career. I really look at my career as unbeaten, because I don't regard that a loss. When you bang heads with someone and you get cut, to me that's not a loss. But I went through my career pretty much unbeaten, and then fought Eubanks, which was out of my weight bracket, but it was an opportunity I got. I took it and lost it, and I lost it to a great fighter. So, you know, basically that's my career.
Yeah, but do you think, Gary, turning professional, I mean, obviously when you did it involve moving away from St. Helens at the time? I mean, where were back then?
I come from a small town, and when they asked me to turn pro, they wanted me to go to London. So I had to do that. And in early days, I think I trained at two places. I trained in Penge.
South East London,
And then I trained with Gary Davidson and Thomas and Beckett.
I remember seeing you in the 90s, Gary, in Hackney. You were running around Victoria Park. I don't know if you can recall in the East End. I don't know, maybe you were warming up for one of the bouts in London.
Yeah, I was living in Penge. I trained with Bobby Neal, who's an amazing trainer. He trained Hannigan and a bunch of guys, but Bobby was amazing, so I live literally above a pub in Penge, and again, you know, you're looking middle of nowhere. You're like, you know, your day is, you wake up at 6, you run, and then you train at 12 for 2 hours, and then you have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, look at the ceiling. You know, it's not easy. You know, kids think you're going to turn pro, it's all glamorous. It ain't glamorous. You literally sit staring at the ceiling 10 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Absolutely.
I'm sure now they have, but, you know, other things to do, but it's not the hardest time in boxing is the downtime, because you sit climbing the wall. That's what you do. You say, what do I do? Don't do anything negative. I don't want to do anything that's not, you know, that doesn't, you can't, like, when you're bored, you want to eat. You can't eat. You're on a diet. So that's out. So then you say, okay, what can I do? And you spend literally 10, 12 hours with them at the season. And that's the discipline of boxing, is how you not do anything negatory to what you're supposed to achieve, but yet you have endless hours of zero.
Now, I was just going to go back, basically, to the clash of heads that you mentioned with Julian Monville. After that fight, you went on to a 12-fight winning streak. And that came before earning a crack at the British Superweight title versus Gary Cooper in 1988. That fight took place in Reading. I mean, what was that evening like for you, and obviously winning the British title on points. Clear. I mean, obviously, that was a big ambition of yours at the time.
You know, it's sad because I love Gary Cooper. He was, to me, everything that British boxing is about. And I didn't want to take it from him. It was like a... It was like a it was like a cross junction. Obviously, I want to become champion, but he resumed everything that I believe in the sport. So, like, I didn't want to take the title from him, and he documented it once. He said, "I don't want to be world champion. I just want to be British champion." And so, when I took that title from him, it was like a bittersweet sensation. I didn't want to take it, but I wanted had to do what my career defined. So I just did it. But yeah, it broke my heart when it was a great champion, tough man. He used to take everything that they have, and he used to beat people late. Like, he'd beat people 9, 10, 11, 12 rounds. He would stop them, having took a barrage of shots the whole night. So. He earned it the hard way, and I really want to take it from him.
And Gary, you went on to have two defences of the British title, and an opportunity arose.
Oh, just one.
Was it one? Sorry, my apologies.
I fought Derek Wormald, who was unbeaten, and I knocked him out in a round. And I wanted one more. I wanted to keep the long tail belt, but I never got to defend it again.
Oh, that's a shame. But you did have an opportunity, though, which arose for the vacant WBC International Super Welterweight title, and you faced the Argentinian Ramon Angel Aguilera at the London Arena. Tough fight, that. I mean, I watched it back recently, and, you know, you stopped him in the sixth, but, you know, that wasn't an easy fight. He was very rough and rugged, wasn't he?
In which one? Sorry?
For the WBC International belt against the Argentinian.
Yeah, no, they brought in an Argentinian, I suppose. To be honest, Frank Warren probably brought in an easy job, but they're never easy. And when you fight a guy who is up there to win, to just come in, you know, the boxing game's so funny because, you know, you get opponents, and opponents have their lives. And you know what the life of an opponent is? The life of an opponent is to fight as soon as he can, get paid, and go home. And so they learn every trick in the book, because if they get stopped, they can't fight. So they want to go to work every week. And so they learn every trick in the book. And so when your manager brings in an opponent just to give you an easy job, if it's a paid opponent who does this for a living, they know every trick in the book. And so you don't stop them that easy, because you stop them, they don't work next week. And so you fight these guys, they come in, and they're so tricky, and it's not easy.
I mean, obviously, you took the belt, the super welterweight vacant WBC international title. Subsequently, after this fight, Gary, I think it was you know, well documented that you had a contract dispute and a fallout, what would appear, with Frank Warren at the time. I mean, you were out of the ring for several months after this. I mean, what actually happened? Was it a dispute, or was it a contract fallout?
Well, no. You know, you have deals with managers. I wasn't happy with Warren, so I said I'm out of it, and basically had I think 11 months left. So you got to sit it out. What can you do? I mean, today it's a different day today. Now you have options. You have, you know, there's so many nations you can go on. There's so many options you can have. But back in the day, it was literally BBC, ITV. You're not with one, you're not with the other. I basically sat out 9 months. And then I got a phone call. Do you want to fight Eubank? I said, can you give me 3 months' notice? They said, no, you have 4.5 weeks. I hadn't trained. I had not been on the road. I had not done a thing. I just basically lived my life for 9 months when I started my contract. And then I got an option to fight Eubanks for 4.5 weeks. I had no possibility of getting in shape. But I took it, and the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, and you were based out in Vegas for those months when you were inactive, right? For that 10 months, were you in Vegas and you hooked up with Freddie Roach? Is that right?
I called Freddie. I said, "Can I stage it?" He said, "Impossible. You can't do it. Don't call me. You don't have enough time." I got on the flight and knocked on his door. I said, "Freddie, begging it. Will you help me?" And he said, "Okay." And I moved into Freddie Roach's house. We trained the best we could for 4.5 weeks. And the fight is what it is. I would give my left arm to have the opportunity to take Chris Eubanks in shape. I beat him every day of the week. No question about it. And I fought him. I was in no shape at all. He didn't touch me for 5 rounds. The only thing that beat me, I was exhausted. And given the opportunity, I just know I was a better fighter. And that's the only regret in my career.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, you touched on the fight there. I mean, just going back to the fight, it was labelled Beauty and the Beast at the time. A time, really, Gary, when you were probably the first pin-up boy of boxing. I mean, you were obviously modelling at the time for Calvin Klein and Versace. I mean, how did that come your way? Was that in the US or was that via the UK?
No, it just came from boxing. You know, it saved my life in many ways because I had made money outside the game. So I was boxing. I was doing my thing. And I got approached by various companies, Calvin Klein, Versace, whoever. Do you want to do a campaign? I said, sure. And I did it. I was never a model. People say he was a male model. I was never a model. I just took the contracts that were offered. I did them, made a few bucks, and that was it. But eventually, when I came to the US, I got sponsored by an agency because of modeling. It was a company called Wilhelmina. And they said, "Do you want us to stay here for sure?" They gave me a 3-year work permit. And I had to go and do X amount of jobs a month, which I did. And they paid me to stay here.
I mean, and obviously back in the day, Gary, you know, ahead of the Eubank fight, just to give our listeners a bit of an insight, I mean, was there a social scene for you in modelling? Did you rub shoulders with at the time of the late 80s, early 90s? I guess, would you say you were rubbing shoulders with A-listers, you know, models, footballers? I mean, just to give our listeners a real insight into what it was like for you back then.
I'll give your listeners an insight to the business. You know what I did? I was in London. There's a club called Brown. So, I mean, that was basically my life. I just was a celebrity. I was a boxer. I went into Brown's. There was models, actors, celebrities. I just did my thing. Young kid in a city that's vibrant, and I just was myself, like any normal kid from any neighborhood. You know, you all of a sudden you're in Brown's in London, the hot spot, and there's beautiful girls, top models, celebrities. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, you're gonna enjoy yourself, absolutely. Now, just going back to the world title fight, obviously against Eubank, it took place at the Olympia, which was one of the biggest televised fights of 1991. Very evenly matched on paper, you know, going into the fight. Both records are very similar. You stepped up in weight, as you mentioned. You had the young Freddie Roach at the time in your corner. It was labelled Beauty and the Beast. During the press conferences and the build-up to the fight, or even the ring walk, did Chris Eubank get under in as he had a real knack of doing this?
No. The biggest issue I had, the whole fight was a lie. So the whole fight for me was a lie. I wasn't in shape. Couldn't get in shape. I didn't have the time. And so I had to fake everything. Every press conference, I played it like I was going to win the fight. But I knew in my heart I had no chance. I didn't have the condition. I was not in shape. And so they give me 4.5 weeks. I tried everything you can do in 4.5 weeks, but it wasn't enough. I just wasn't in shape. And so it's a massive regret to my life because I don't mind. Chris Eubank may beat me in the greatest shape of my life. I would not say that he couldn't beat me. But I would like the opportunity to know that if I was in great shape, I believe I could have beat him because I believe I had the better of him. If I could beat him in round one, if you look at science, if I could beat him in round one, and I could sustain round 1 to round 12. I'm better than him. And I didn't have that ability. I died after 6 rounds. I was exhausted. I was tired. I didn't have the strength. I dieted. I trained for 4.5 weeks. But just didn't have a strength. But if you beat him in round 1, I can beat him in round 2. I can beat him in round 3. If I can beat him in round 1, am I better than him? I think I am. And so if I can sustain 1 to 12, I win. And that's the biggest reason of my life. I think of myself, I didn't have an opportunity to fight him on square turf. They called me, they give me a date, and they said, take it or leave it. And I took it, and I lost.
And Gary, I mean, you shortly after that fight, it's not like you disappeared, but you kind of turned your back on the industry. I mean, back then, the middleweight division was red hot. Did you not feel like sticking around to maybe get another fight in that division?
I should have. What I should have done is took it as a learning curve in my life and then trained hard. I didn't do that. I went the other way. I was like rebellious. I had one more fight for a guy.
Steve Goodwin, wasn't it? Is he the promoter now? Steve Goodwin?
Yeah. He was an army kid. He was a tough kid. And I called my promoter. I said, give me a fight at junior middleweight. I'm not going out. You know, if I'm going to leave the game, I ain't going out getting beat. So I said, get me a fight. I said, okay, who to put me in with? Get me a fight. And Brendan Ingalls brought in Steve Goodwin, and I beat him in a sloppy fight in Brixham. It wasn't the greatest fight ever, but I won it, and I walked away.
And Gary, when you did walk away, did you have a plan of action? Because obviously you've entered acting, pretty much, you know, very. Very not too long after your boxing career. Was this always a plan for you? Had you always planned to go to the US? You know, once the gloves were down, because not many boxers have a plan, you know, after they finish the game.
I didn't have a big plan. I walked away. I was very sad with boxing, and I had offers like stupid, you know, I had stuff, but it wasn't a career. I made a career later. You know, the film business is like the boxing business. You got to educate yourself. So if you can fly it, like you can try and just get a job here and there and be lucky, or you can go to work and study and all the above. So I went. I decided I was out of fighting, and I went into the film business. So I studied every day. I went to film school. I studied acting, I studied, you know, camera stuff, film, and it's a whole other process, but you got to do the work. So I went into it. I think now I have possibly a career because I've worked hard enough. But again, when I first left the fight game, it was like fly. It was like, you know, what can I do now? And so I got a few little jobs here and there and made some money. But it's not a career. It's not a career. If you want to be in film, you got to get in film. If you want to get in film, you got to learn the film business. So it took me 20 years to learn. You know, they say now, I just made a movie, the Ronda Rousey film, it's on Netflix. And it's just a little film. It's just a little documentary. But it took me 20 years to become an overnight success. Does it come easy? You gotta go to work.
Yeah, but obviously over them 20 years, you've met some great people. And I read a story recently about Mickey Rook, and because you know Freddie Roach obviously well, he was in your corner. You were kind of the catalyst for Mickey Rook to have a boxing career. Is that right?
I introduced Mickey to Freddie because Mickey was going to commit suicide. So I met Mickey, called me, we became friends. Of the years, and then one night he called me in the middle of the night. He was in a lot of distress, and I went over to see him. I said, Mickey, what's going on? You know, he wanted to kill himself, and he'd broke up with his wife. And I said, Mickey, the only thing I can think of, let's fight. You want to be a fighter? You all talk about it. Just get in shape. And so I called Freddie. I put them together, and he started training. He got himself in a better state of mind. and he had a few fights, and it was good for his soul. That was basically what we did. We just got him healthy again. And, you know, it's tough. Like, Mickey, big film star, wants to kill himself. What's that about?
Yeah, it's just
tough. Everybody, you think everybody's got a better story than you, but we don't have a better story. Everybody's, you know, suffering. Mickey was suffering. And so, you know, the only thing Mickey could do was get in shape. And that's what we did. And the rest is history.
And Gary, in 2004, you got casted in Oliver Stone's Alexander alongside Sir Anthony Hopkins, Colin Farrell and Angelina Jolie, to mention a few. I mean, what was this like working alongside, you know, Sir Anthony Hopkins?
I'm saying, how well versed are you in my career? You know everything.
We know everything.
Well, the internet's a wonderful thing these days, Gary.
Well, I applaud your research, but yes, I in 84, it was 84, you said, Alexander?
2004, Oliver Stone's Alexander alongside Anthony Hopkins. I mean, what was that like?
Well, I mean, what's the movie? It is what it is. But I was in Thailand. I just finished a film called The Kingmaker with an old producer, David Winters, who just died. He was in West Side Story. He was one of the leads in West Side Story. And he made a movie, The Kingmaker. I played the lead, and I was in Thailand. Oliver is looking for location for Alexander. And we had a meeting. And basically, he liked me for some strange reason. And then he offered me the part of Titus, yeah.
I mean, obviously, Colin Farrell was part of the actors for the movie. And I'm led to believe that Colin Farrell is a huge boxing fan. I mean, he's been spotted here in Bethnal Green at York Hall.
Colin's a great kid. Colin is a great kid. And we met in the movie. And he's just a good boy. He's really like Irish, real deal Irish. Just a great kid. And so I spent 9 months together on the movie. We became very close. I actually lived with Colin for 8 of the month. We got a hotel together. We separated from the rest of the cast and crew. And me and Colin got a house together, and we just did our work. And every night we'd come home. We would limit ourselves to one bottle of wine. So we'd say, okay, we're going to have one bottle of wine. We're going to have, it was pink wine. He chose every night, and we'd have one bottle of wine, we'd have a glass each, and we'd read the script like crazy, and then we'd go to work the next day and do our thing. And then we became extremely close.
And he's a big boxing fan, right?
We never talked about boxing, to be honest. We just did our thing. We read the script every day, and we worked on it, and we'd go to work every day, and that was it. There's never a boxing conversation.
And Charlie, you got a question?
Yeah, obviously, lately, you know, Netflix, everyone's, you know, COVID-19's, everyone's on lockdown, Gary. And I mean, I stumbled across your production, you know, Ronda Rousey. I mean, an amazing, amazing production. I mean, can you just give us, you know, yeah, it was fantastic. You know, and for all our listeners, you know, I think they should go and you know, light it up and definitely give it a watch, because it was, you know, fantastic. I mean, what was she like close up? Because it was kind of a historic moment, you know, in the perception of women's sports, certainly in combat sports, and she changed that completely.
You know, Ronda, I have mixed feelings for the fact that I made the movie, and at that time, I was I got extremely close to Ronda, but she strayed. And so basically, when I met Ronda, she was in a gym with Jean LaBelle and Gorkarchevichian, and they're two of the greatest trainers of our time. Gorkarchevichian is an Armenian animal, and so he trained Ronda on the ground. He got to the ground, Ronda beat you. And basically what happened was she met a guy, Edwin Tavernian, I think his name, and he made her believe she was something she wasn't. He kept saying, you know, he was a world champion kickboxer. He has no resume. I looked him up on, you know, today we have internet, so you can look at You can look people up. My resume is online. He has no resume. So he basically told her he was a world champion kickboxer, which he wasn't, and he trained her some way, and he told her, you can go out there and you can stand up with these guys. And I told Rhonda, I'm a world champion boxer. I've been there, been around the block. I finished champion, whatever that may be. It's something. And I said, Rhonda, you can't do that. You can't learn the pocket in a year. Pocket is when you get the space and you understand base. It takes years to understand the space. I said, Rhonda, you can't learn it in 1 year. Don't throw away 20 years of judo for 1 year boxing. You can't do it. Anyway, this trainer told her, she's going to be the greatest hand person in the world. She went out and she got knocked out twice. That was it. She went out there thinking she's Missy Big Shoes and then knocked out twice. Yeah.
And Gary, during your time, obviously producing and directing through my father's eyes, the Ronda Rousey story, you are involved with Ronda, you know, from a very, very early stage of her career. I mean, the story is beautiful, I must admit. I've watched it myself. It is beautiful. Your time with Ronda, you become a boxing coach. You follow it all the way through. How long did the project take? I mean, how long did you actually spend working on it?
3.5 years. 7.5 years I spent making that movie. Well, yeah, it's a long process.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch, just to our listeners out there. If you haven't seen it, it really is beautiful. We really enjoyed it. I mean, and as I touched on, you were Ronda's boxing coach quite early on. Are you still involved with boxing now? I mean, I read recently that Freddie Roach wanted you to be involved with Amir Khan. Not that long ago. Are you still involved in the game now?
I'm not involved in the game now. No.
Okay. Have you got...
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to find a great fighter that I could... So if you can podcast this, amazing. I'd like to find a great fighter that I can take to another level.
Yeah, so any up-and-coming boxer out there, if you need a coach, Gary Stretch is available, US or UK.
No, but you know what I mean. I'm talking about a serious kid. I'm talking about someone who wants to give their life to the sport. I have a few tips, maybe I can help on the way. I just wish I could give something back. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlie,
Charlie there.
I think we might have lost Charlie. I mean, have you got any film or acting projects in the pipeline currently? Anything directing or you're producing at the moment?
So if I'm a kid who needs some help and I want to give him the help, that's my main objective right now. So my film business doesn't matter. I don't care.
Charlie's back. Sorry, guys, I lost you there. Well, Gary, we you never know. We might find that kid for you over in the UK shores. So what's this space?
What?
I said, you never know. We might find that kid for you over in the UK. If you need a little project.
Now, let me tell you something. Tell you something now. You put it on a live. It's real. It's right now. You find me a kid, I'll make him a world champion.
We'll try our very best. Now, Gary, really, I mean, we could spend all evening, honestly, talking about your career. It's been, you know, it's been fantastic catching up with you. But I want to just basically conclude with one question, really, regarding your life, your career. You know, you've had a colourful career as a boxer, as a model, as an actor, as a director and a producer. But what would you say, honestly, has been your biggest achievement to date in your career?
Whoa, that's a big one. Am I talking to Charlie or Mark?
Talking to Mark.
My biggest career.
Biggest achievement, throughout, you know, to date currently.
It's a tough one, Mark. I think, big one. I think my biggest achievement is, nothing I have on Mark. Can you talk?
Yeah, sorry, Gary. I missed that. You just repeat that.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk. What's my biggest career, Mark?
Oh, you'd like me to choose? I would say, given your love of the sport, I would say being British champion would be the answer to the question for you, because, you know, you've devoted your younger years to the game. You were very, very talented. And that belt really, you know, would take pride, I think, in anyone's household. And certainly Gary Stretch's. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah, I would. You know, Mark...
Losing that fight to Eubank?
No, I never got my Lonsdale belt.
The Lonsdale belt, yeah.
I never got it. I was so overqualified for the Lonsdale belt, meaning British champion. I fight the next number one, whoever that would be. I would destroy them and got my Lonsdale belt. I never got it, Mark.
No, still, you've had a great career. You've done many things in and outside of boxing. You know, you should be very, very proud of all your achievement, Gary. But, you know, all I will say is it's been fascinating catching up with you. We wish you all the very best for the future. And we hope to see you on our screens, even back in the UK on Netflix in the not-too-distant future. And, you know, from everyone on the ropes and Phoenix FM, you know, thank you for your time.